Hello everyone, welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. My name's Tim Edwards, I'm the editor of PC Gamer, and joining us in the studio today to talk about PC games and nothing but PC games for hours and hours and hours, we're very sorry, is Tom Francis.
Hello.
Hello, Tom is section... What is your job title, Tom? I always forget this.
Still section editor.
Section editor. When were you last section editor?
I still do edit a section, it's just, yeah. You know, a very small part of what I do.
You do everything else. Okay, Tom is joined as well by Craig.
Hello.
Hello, Craig is our news editor, although he doesn't really... do just news anymore.
No, I do everything. I've also got a cold, so if I cough or snot over the microphone, I do apologise.
The other thing today is there's only three of us because everyone else is either ill, off, or flying to a separate country. So we are one down. Rich is actually in Iceland, which is nice.
Reykjavik,
both,
right?
Yeah,
Reykjavik.
They're both flying to separate countries right now. It's only Rich and Graham, really.
Yeah,
Reykjavik and Tokyo.
Bastards.
Yeah.
Jet setting. Right, so we've got a new issue that's about to go on sale. It's PC Gamer 221.
Yeah.
And we've done a cover, well, five covers on Diablo 3, which is...
You just take a while to flick through them all.
Yeah, so if you could, like, once you get your magazine, if you could just move one cover to the side and just kind of pick the one you enjoy.
We are joking, of course.
Yeah, so subs will get it, and there's one special cover that looks really gorgeous, but on the newsstand there's four separate ones, and we have a cover for every class in Diablo 3, which is very cool and very funny.
How did I miss that?
Did you not know?
I sent the opposite side of the office from the art people.
That's incredible. I'll have to show you. They're very good. And the reason I'm calling it Diablo is because it's actually called Diablo, apparently. Is it called Diablo or Diablo?
What do you know from Blizzard?
Yeah, and one of them really pisses off all the Blizzard PRs if I call it that.
So if I used to always call it Diablo, and then I think Americans definitely call it Diablo.
Okay, well, we'll call it Diablo from now on.
I like Diablo.
And because that really annoys Blizzard France. And I played it, and it's really good.
Hooray.
Did you click a lot?
I clicked a hell of a lot. The demo at BlizzCon was really interesting because they had about an hour and a half's worth of Diablo to play, and
it's like Dota.
Yeah,
Dota and Dota.
And we absolutely caned it for a long time, playing all the classes, all the different dungeons I had. Played the PvP mode, which is really interesting. We'll get to that in a second. And like just kind of filled my head with Diablo stuff. So if anyone has any questions on Diablo, then I can answer them.
What is the best class?
I really like the wizard.
I think I'm going to pick the wizard this one.
There are five classes, and the wizard is the one that is just pure pew pew. And like one of her like basic attacks is just a giant laser beam that fires out of her hands. You're like, well, it can't really get much better than this.
Laser wizard.
It's just a ruler that destroys shit that you send out. The other one that I think is stupidly fun is the new one they announced, which is the Demon Hunter, because that is really spammy and quite like fast and flicky. It's like a archer with crossbows that throws grenades and does magic.
It's funny how we kind of pretty much knew what the final class would be without knowing what the final class was called or anything about it. It would have to be a ranged class. It would have to probably have the traps that they use previously, and it would have to, you know.
It's definitely going to have a bow of some sort. You know, you just look at it and think, well, they haven't got a bow class. Bows are fancy.
What is I've seen in the Demon Hunter video, she like fires a thing out and it like links to enemies with a chain. What does that do?
That is actually your eyes deceiving you.
What?
So there are lots of enemies that... So there's a type of enemy that kind of comes towards you, and then it links themselves.
Oh, so the enemy is doing
it. Yeah, so, but sometimes it looks like the attack is doing it itself.
How does it feel compared to like Diablo 2 and whatever?
Really, really violent. Yeah. So the first thing is that all the dungeons that you go through are built in 3D rather than just being kind of 2D sprites. And you get a sense of that when kind of Gibbs and random bodies and loots kind of bouncing off the walls. Mm-hmm. And there's cool things you can do with certain abilities like Demon Hunter's grenade. You can kind of bounce it around walls and curve it off. The other thing is that it's got this kind of base punch to every hit that we kind of forget. Like, we're fancy pansy PC gamers.
And, you know, like, speak for yourself. Oh, yeah.
And just the sheer brutality of every kind of hit and punch and, you know, the violence of that is really cool.
What really appealed to me about Diablo 1, actually, is like, it just felt so good to hit something in that. Like, you get a wooden club and you hit a zombie in the head and it sounds exactly like that should sound.
Exactly. I mean, like, leveling up in Diablo, this is going to get really boring.
Just pronounce it however you want.
leveling up is just like being punched in the gut.
Yes.
Because in WoW, when you level up, you get this kind of nice, fancy little kind of golden rainbow that goes around your character and goes ding, and you feel like it's a ding. In Diablo, the whole screen lights up. You get this cloud of gas that kind of punches out of the air, and just like the whole screen basically goes gold. And it like thuds really hard. It's like super bass thud. And it's like, it's intrusive. It's kind of traumatic.
Yeah.
And like,
to be fair, that's kind of, you know, you have spent your last hour beating things to death. Yeah. It's probably your character having some sort of nervous breakdown.
But it's a really vicious feeling.
And does the character vomit afterwards?
Yeah, he should just
like, life phase. God, he's on all fours. I think I gained a level.
The funniest part of that though is that that punchiness is passed on to the guys who follow you around. You have this like caravan of traders who follow you when you're kind of leveling, and they will, if you spend certain amounts of cash with them or do certain things with them, they'll level up as well. And the tragedy of that is that it has the same level up animation, so for spending a certain amount of money you get gut punched and upgraded.
Yeah, I saw like a video of the blacksmith being upgraded from like his little workshop to the top level thing.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it just explodes in this massive like apocalypse of light. Yeah. And then everything's slightly shinier.
I mean, the original video that released the Bioshock, when the guy basically leveled up, it looked really painful and horrible. Yeah. His fingers going all weird and his fists blowing up and stuff like that.
The other fun part of Diablo is that so you have all those skills, and every class I think the numbers were 21 skills that every class have, and there's 5 levels to each skill. So, you know, you can have like a level 1 magic missile, or you can have a level 5 magic missile. But then you also have these runes that you apply to them to change how that skill works.
Oh, yeah.
So the example they gave, which was fucking hilarious, as we said, is the Plague of Toads skill, which the witch doctor has, which basically these kind of angry frogs jump out and kind of blow up next to zombies. And like when you first use it, like it's quite cool, you know, you get some frogs and you like, that's very funny, very, very funny, you know, frogs hurting people. But then you apply different runes to that skill and you'll get like poison frogs, and they kind of poison the enemies and they slow them down, and then they're sick and they vomit. You get exploding frogs, which are like proper fire frogs that jump along. There was like the obsidian rune or something did it, so it wasn't a plague of frogs, it was a rain of frogs that just kind of fell from the ceiling and just kind of battered people, and you could see them like bouncing off their head.
And they're like, this isn't a plague, this is a rain.
It's a hail, it should be a hail of frogs. But then the final one was just like one giant badass frog that went around and just kind of ate everyone and shat out loot. It was just like really, really cool. And the thought of applying all those runes to that different skill, all those different skills, is fucking cool. But then like those runes themselves have levels.
Oh my god.
So if you have a level 5 obsidian rune, that turns it into your plague of frogs into the beastiest badass frog of all time. He'll just go around eating up and shitting.
I've never played Diablo, whatever it's called. Yeah. Did the original games have that level of wackiness to them?
There was no kind of unicorn rainbows, like silliness to it. I think there's more of a sense of humor Diablo 3.
Given what Blizzard?
Given they should Blizzard, call themselves
yeah. Blizzard. Given what Blizzard have done to WoW, and every time you come in and start talking about it, you're saying, it's got more bikes now, it's got this now, and it's just like getting crazier and crazier. It seems at some point during the 2000s, the company hired someone with a very strange sense of humor who's polluted the entire company.
I don't know, like, it was a weird one meeting the Diablo team, because when it was first announced, there was that ridiculous petition to kind of, you know, make it darker, make it grimier, stop turning Diablo into WoW. And they have, they've moved away a little bit from the original art design, and they have actually responded to that, and it looks a little bit kind of just, I'm not going to say darker or kind of more mature, but it looks more settled and not kind of rainbow pony than it originally did. Yeah, I mean, it is a funny game. And, you know, I think you can't make a game about killing hundreds and... I mean, like, Diablo looks like... The idea behind Diablo is this kind of giant threat coming over onto the world and destroying it. But in reality, it's the demons that should be bricking themselves, because one guy can just march through billions of them and just turn them into a kind of...
frog.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, so there is a, it's just Conan, essentially. Right. And they've gone, oh, that's just fucking gibberish. I'm sorry, guys. but yeah, there's, it is a silly game.
Cool. Will I enjoy it?
I don't know.
You know, I mean, I never played them. Well, I have tried to play them and I've just bounced off there.
Do you like fun?
I like fun, but I like specific type of fun. I like physics.
Yeah.
I like physics of fun. But I feel always feel disconnected. I tried Titan Quest whenever it said it's got more physics in it, and I still felt disconnected from what was happening to what's happening in front of me. So I don't know if it's the same.
Titan Quest is fucking hard.
It is really hard.
Once you get like into the game proper, like you keep thinking, okay, I've got my character sorted now, it kind of works. And then you go into the next area and you realize like the basic enemy can completely destroy you.
Yeah.
Something that really interested me in preview of Dabo is that they're saying, as someone says, you know, you're adding all these like runes and stuff and all these crazy abilities, how are you going to balance that for PvP? How can you keep it like carefully balanced? And they said, yeah, we can't really. Frankly, so like,
bugger it.
We're not going to, you know, restrict our single player design for the sake of making PvP perfectly in June. And it's not going to be like, you know, StarCraft. It's not supposed to be an esport. Yeah. It's supposed to be a bit of fun with your friends. And so we don't really care if there's a particular skill that's overpowered.
So the,
which is awesome. That's what I like.
The PvP in Diablo is just like straight arenas. And it's as static as you have three players, they have three players, and the last man standing or last team standing wins.
So it's a PvP, but like team deathmatch
type. Yeah, pretty much. And you choose your skill. You bring your character in from the single player campaign. You bring all your armor sets in. You bring all your abilities in. And you just go for it. So if you've got Giant Toad of Death, then you know you play with that. The fun thing is, like, did you ever play a game called Power Stone on the Dreamcast?
Nope.
Yes, I did actually.
Yeah.
God, that was wacky.
That was like this pretty wacky. But it's basically a bit like that, but built for the PC.
Wow. Power Stone was like a pub fight.
Yeah, it's basically a brawl. It's just a, like a straight brawl in 3D. But you have kind of situations. So when we first went on, we me and a couple of friends, including Al Bickham from of old PC Gamer fame, we went in and just kind of decided, well, what we'll do is we'll take a character of every class that was available. So it's a wizard, witch doctor, and barbarian, and go and have some fun. Then the team we were playing against went in just all in with wizards. So as soon as we kind of started
wizard formation. Yeah.
As soon as we started up, the first person like who left the blocks was just immediately focused with like these three death laser beams of death. Yeah. And like, you know, that is pretty tough to deal with. But you just have to accept it and move on, and you know, I didn't fucking rage. Everyone else raged. So I just went,
come on. Kick the PC over, storm away from the stand.
It was a really good laugh, and I think what I like about it is that it's really throwaway. It's not, you know, it's not an e-sport. It's not pretending to be an e-sport. It's just a bunch of, it's just for dicking around in lunchtime.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, Diablo 1's PvP kind of, it was just, you're in this world, like there's this, you know, there's still Diablos invading, there's still hell beneath this village, they're still normal nice citizens, but now you're just going to hurt each other. If you happen to run into each other, you just kill each other.
Sucks.
there's no question of balance or, you know, making a game of it in any way. It was just, well, we just click this little button, now you can kill each other.
Yeah, it's PvP on kind of thing.
So I joined a server once in Diablo. This is my proudest and also most shameful moment in those days, which was kind of the dawn of the internet, like you know, online gaming wasn't really a big thing. And it was this weird world where, you know, there were suddenly all these thousands of instances of this game running out there. And it's a very tightly focused single-player game. There's no kind of explanation for why your character would be transporting between different versions of the world and that kind of stuff. And I joined someone's game, and he'd left all his loot in town, like a big heaps of money and all this other stuff. And he was obviously questing down in the dungeon. So I talked to him, said, "Hey," and then he didn't respond. And he was clearly higher level than me. Like, he just had an amazing kit. And obviously, the stuff you leave in town tends to be like your alt gear or stuff you're kind of going to sell or maybe trade or something. And I said, "Hey, can I have this axe?" He didn't respond. And I waited like 5 minutes. "Hey, are you there?" No response. "Okay, I'm taking this."
Bye.
It was called Gotterdammerung, and it's just like a stick with these two huge crescent blades coming off either side of it. It just looked like the most amazing thing in the world. Did like plus 300% damage or something. It was absolutely absurd. And that just made my character. It was awesome after that.
It's wow. The armor sets in Diablo 3 are really nice, actually. there's like dozens and dozens of them, and they all kind of they're all themed really nicely.
So it's built for the. I mean, it was always built for the obsessive collector type.
Yeah. Oh God, it's like it is just a pure kind of they're tweaking the numbers constantly, so constantly get your the back of your mind kind of constantly thinking about the numbers that you're going to improve and get plus one in a certain statistic. It's yeah for anyone who has a deep and meaningful relationship with leveling up. Yeah, you're doomed.
In trouble, aren't they?
Yeah, you're absolutely doomed.
Cool.
So I guess we should probably talk about Black Ops.
Yep.
There's no way to segue into this. Black Ops has come out. It's the biggest game of
similar to Diablo in that.
And it has no. So it's come out. It's the biggest game of all time, probably. It's being played millions and millions of hours on Steam. It's out on all the consoles. Tom. You don't like it, do you?
It's not very good, no. Yeah. There's three bits to it. There's single player, multiplayer, in inverted commas, and zombie mode, which is okay. Also multiplayer.
Right, so let's address them in order. Single player, what do you think of it?
It's kind of... it's been lauded like mad. Like, the first review is all 95%, and the first one was like 98% from Cheat Code Central. And people are just going fucking nuts for it. And what they're saying is that man, it's as good as Infinity Wars. And it's almost as good as Infinity Wars, and Infinity Wars was kind of boring, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, the first Modern Warfare had enough awesome set pieces that it was worth, you know, drudging through the kind of hide behind a crate, shoot a guy behind a crate, shoot 90 more guys behind a crate before you're allowed to move on bits, just to see the next, you know, sniper mission.
Yeah,
and that kind
or
of
the nuke going off or something like that.
And Modern Warfare 2 was basically exactly the same. And suffered for it because the annoying bits were still annoying, the boring bits were even more boring, and the you know amazing set pieces were it's kind of okay, but it's not as impressive as it was first time around. And basically Treyarch, who are the guys who do the odd numbered Call of Duty games,
call them the B team,
have always been like just dismissed as you know inferior to Infinity War, can't keep up, can't make anything as cool as all these awesome set pieces as Infinity War do. Now they have with Black Ops, like clearly the set pieces in Black Ops are I think easily as spectacular and often more exciting than Modern Warfare's, because often you're like involved in them, like you're flying the chopper or whatever, but they're not as good at scripting stuff. And to be honest, Infinity War weren't that great at it either. Like there were plenty of bits where you don't know whether you can just whether you're supposed to wipe out all the enemies or move forwards, and there's bits where you want to do your own thing, but it blocks you with invisible barriers.
Yeah.
And Black Ops is much worse, and the scripting is just fucking terrible. There are bits where, like, there's a bit, I just wrote about this in my review, but there's a bit where you are running away from a snowy outpost while an avalanche is about to come, and up ahead, a guy with an RPG runs out, and you shoot him, nothing happens, because he's invincible until he fires his RPG. Once he fires his RPG, it hits the pathway in front of you. And if you play normally, like if you just play at the exact pace that they expect you to, then two of your friends have gone across, another three friends are just ahead of you, you're last.
Yep.
And the guy in front of you is directly over the rocket when it hits the walkway. He falls down to his death.
Very
and
sad.
You fall down and like hang on to the ledge and then climb back up. But if you try and run ahead of that guy, you can't. There's an invisible barrier that's like moving ahead
that's
of him, so you
rubbish.
Can't get past him. Like you can get past him, but then you can't get past the invisible barrier in front of his face. And if you're way behind him, it teleports you to where he is so that you can catch him as he falls.
Jesus.
And then if after he's fallen, you're on the wrong side of the gap and you've got to jump it. It's quite a long gap, so I stepped back to take a run up. And as soon as I did, it just said, "You left your team behind." End game. And I had to do it. Even when I knew, I had to do it quickly. I had to take like three attempts to get across this gap because you just like feel like you need to take a run up because
it's
a big gap.
It's a big gap.
And if you do, it's just, oh, well, now you're too far behind and the next scripted sequence isn't going to work because you're not close enough to these guys for
to make
sense.
Well, maybe they should just teleport you over there.
Yeah, just teleport me everywhere. Or make a fucking film.
I really hate being forced to play a game at a certain pace. That really drives me nuts. That's why I spent 5 minutes playing this game and turned it off, because the first thing that happened was, oh, you got to run here now, you got to run here now. Off.
And I have to say, like the introduction, like the thing I found about it is that I'm nowhere near completing it, but there's no pacing to it. There's like everything is turned up to 12,
exactly,
and it's constant blah 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 blah. The thing I loved about Modern Warfare, and I think the reason I felt kind of I really did enjoy it, was there were moments of silence where you appreciated the calm before the storm.
Yeah.
Now there is just storm, and it goes on forever. The second thing is, like, it looks really bad in places. Like, the technology is so old and so decrepit that it just makes me feel sad for Treyarch for still working with this stuff. And there are times when, like, you can see the gap between the shot going off and the action taking place, and then the body or whatever happens just teleports like 5 meters and then goes through the motion where they're kind of ragdolling and spinning. And I'm basically a little bit bored of that thing where you have a shotgun and you shoot at a bus and the entire bus explodes immediately. Like, I've had enough of that.
I don't remember a bit.
Yeah. I can't even wait to play that game, to be honest.
That's in the motorbike bit when you're.
Oh yeah, yeah. As soon as you get in a motorbike, your shotgun becomes all powerful.
Yeah,
long
it just
range.
Becomes a rocket launcher. Like, I quite enjoyed the escape from the gulag, which is quite well done. I felt a bit sad for big bulky guy. That was a depressing end for him. But I don't know. Like, it just, I'm so bored of that now.
About the gulag in Modern Warfare?
In Black Ops.
Black Ops. Okay, so it's not the gulag, right?
It's a labor camp thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, like...
There's nothing about it that interests me. The setting, I just looked over and saw Tom, and it's Castro and Bay of Pigs, and it's just like they went to Wikipedia and put in Cold War and picked out all the highlighted sections from there, and then...
I like the sort of spirit of that stuff. Like, the... I think if someone explained the concept to me about Black Ops without ever telling me and like ever showing me the game, I would have been really excited about it, because the idea of being like a sort of covert operative who is using all the kind of spy gadgetry, but in the 60s when the spy gadgetry was a bit weird and you know, you got all these like sellotaped weapon mods and that kind of stuff, that sounds really fun. But then when you play it, there are like every now and then you get a little bit of forced stealth mission, some of which were utterly shit, and then it leads into just another war and it's just you know, get on the machine gun Mason.
The Vietnam level is awful. Like, I'm basically finished now at the very end of the first Vietnam bit. So I don't know if there's any more Vietnam stuff coming.
Yeah, there's...
And that defense, that base is horrifically tedious.
I can't remember it now. I played it in such like
it's like, you know, you go through the same stuff we've been in so long. You go through some trenches, kill some men, then you get a rocket launch to fend off some tank guys, then you know, you go down a hill and drop some napalm. It's like, it's just boring.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I just had enough of it. And it's a game that thinks its audience is so stupid, it won't let them open a door. Someone has to come and open a door
for
you.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, I'm not a child now. It's an 18 rated game. I think people can work out how to use door handles in your
mechanics. That's a laugh. I saw Homefront recently at a preview event, and I was playing it, in fact, and ran up to a door, and I just thought, can I open this? No problem. I'll wait for an NPC to get here. Anyway. Fuck's sake. You talk about player empowerment. Yeah. I can't open a door.
Yeah. I mean,
it's like there's a concept in game design called gating, which is to do with like anytime you want something specific to happen, you need to know where the player is, or you need to know that he has a certain item or that he's done a certain thing. And so you put in gating, which is when he picks up this triggers that to open, or this triggers, you know, this explosion, which then lets him through. And the Call of Duty games, it's just literally gates. There is a gate there that is shut until the NPC opens it for you so you can progress.
And it's like, I look at the kind of what's happened to shooter games, and there's that shining moment where System Shock 2 and Thief were incredible and let you explore this place and do things at your own kind of pace and timing.
Funny enough, what this has made me think of is Far Cry. Because... Yeah. Just, you know, at the time before Half-Life 2 and Doom 3 were out, both of which are fairly linear, straightforward shooters, and Half-Life 2 does it way better than any of the Call of Duty games, but there was a time when, you know, a big, like, amazing-looking, technologically cutting-edge game was the most kind of free-form shooter you could hope for, like, absolutely massively open-ended in some levels.
You know, Far Cry had its problems, but it was really visionary at the time, like, really...
And it's like, not just go anywhere on this island, but then get in a boat and go to any other island in this massive, like, arc of play.
Yeah.
It gets overlooked a bit because some of the really huge levels are actually really late in the game, and people think it went downhill halfway through and say, oh, there's an indoor bit, it's all going to be indoor, I'm not playing the rest. But actually, there was some awesome stuff right to the end.
Yeah. Same with Crysis as well. Like, I look at the same tech they're using in the Call of Duty games, and, you know, you can almost see the edges of the Quake 3. Like, if you listen hard enough, I swear you can hear that ding when you shoot someone that the Quake 3 engine has. But I think why they haven't moved to something like the crisis tech or you know, just something a bit more exciting than
Quake 3.
Yeah, than Quake 3. God. It just makes me sad.
You're gonna have fun with the rest of the game putting up with the numbers and the interrogation.
That's
the guy who says, Mason, remember Mason. Mason, you were there, Mason. You're alone, Mason. What happened, Mason? Shut up, I know my name.
It's their version of Jason, isn't it?
And then you get like, then your character gets pissed off with him too, and he's saying, how many times do I have to fucking tell you? And he's saying, how many times do I have to ask? Oh, for God's sake, get a room.
Can I just make a point as well, is that I'm a little bit tired of torture scenes in games now. Like, opening up your menu as a torture scene might have sounded like a really good idea, but actually it just makes me feel a bit sad that this is the only idea we've got left. And it's not, I don't know, like,
well, like
as a bleeding heart UK liberal, I think
it's at that horrible level of Jerry Bruckheimer where it's what's the most dramatic thing that can happen possibly, you know, and that's where drama, that's where game drama really loses it as far as I'm concerned, because they've got this big old book of tropes that they keep on returning to.
Yeah, I mean, look, so many game directors are just failed filmmakers who would love to be doing something like the next Bond and just can't afford to, and so they just recycle their cliched shit in games.
Yeah.
And people put up with it because we don't really have many games that are, you know, on the same level as a really good action flick that, you know, work in that way. And because they shouldn't. Like, that's not what a game is.
You look at something like Inception and how smart and clever and detailed and deep that film is. You know, it's still a summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
And games can easily aspire to the level of Inception. They don't have to aspire to the same level as fucking Rambo.
In fact, Inception is a film that sets up this really elaborate system of rules and settings and things that it's actually quite hard for a film to explain. They have to keep on explaining how this works. And in a game, that would be a thing that you could actually set up systematically and the players could just discover on their own and experiment with and find out the rules in a much more natural way.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're going to have fun with them. Before we move on, if you don't like the torture scene it starts with, you're going to like the torture scene where you're the torturer and you have to...
Fucking hell.
Press right mouse to break window and then press left mouse to put glass in mouth and then press left mouse to punch.
God.
it's a horrible idea and then it's badly done as well because it just looks completely lame. You just pick up this like one little this tiny little triangle of glass and place it on his tongue and then kind of
you with this.
Hit him in this really unconvincing way and he like has no facial reaction to it at all. He's just kind of staring at you vacantly.
Jesus.
And this guy is a chemist who does, you know, chemical weapons, like a scientist. Yeah. Chemical scientist. And you can tell this because he has chemical formulas written on his face. That's the level of character design.
I won't see that.
God, that's really bad. So, anyway, multiplayer.
Can we talk about the racist zombie mode?
Shall we get to the racist zombie mode?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the actual multiplayer because it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's unplayable at the moment. When we record this, every time I go onto a server, it just lags so horribly that I just can't do anything.
Are you saying Owen said the same?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that bad for me. I do get the you know, lock up for 1 second fairly frequently, like a couple of times in a game.
Yeah.
But it has been playable enough for me to actually see what's in the multiplayer and, you know, test it out. And actually what's in there is kind of cool. Like they've reworked it so that instead of leveling up and just being given a bunch of unlocks, quite a lot of unlocks are just available to you right from the start, but you buy them with these like in-game points.
Okay.
Which works better than I thought it would actually, because it's kind of, it gives you more of a motive to level up. Like, in Modern Warfare, you spend 90% of your time in a situation where you've unlocked what your short-term goal, like the basic rifle that's quite good.
Yeah.
But you're nowhere near unlocking the dual shotguns that can snipe people from halfway across the map.
Yeah.
And so you just spend all your time in that situation. It doesn't really matter whether you level up or not. But here, like every point you earn is something you can spend on either unlocking stuff you've got access to, or
either unlocking the sniper shotguns, or
you can unlock the tomahawk. Is one of the first things you unlock, like the throwing knife in Modern Warfare. Only it bounces as well,
great,
it ricochets off walls and kills people. And then you can also bet money on a wager match, and it's really weird. They've like if it worked, the multiplayer would actually be pretty cool. But even if it did, it's strange that like a couple of their best ideas are in this wager mode where you have to pay 500. You know, in-game money to join a match, and then you only get any money back if you're first, second, or third. And the last one I played was they're all special game modes. So the last one I played was Sticks and Stones, which is where you've got a crossbow that fires explosive bolts, but they're on like a time delay. Your basic knife, the projectile knife, where it just fires its blade at people, and the tomahawks that you can throw.
Yeah.
And so it's just all like blades, basically.
Yeah.
And the way it works is that if you hit someone with a tomahawk, it resets their score to zero, and every other weapon, every other kill you get, like, increases your score, and then only the top three people get some money back. So it's really tense, and it's just kind of hilarious because the weapons you've got are so kind of cool. Like, if you use them properly, like, I had a couple of kill streaks where I'd run up behind someone, hit them with a tomahawk, because that's always what you're trying to use, because you want to get as many people with that as possible. Then, because I throw my tomahawk and picked it back up, and the guy comes around the corner, I fire a knife into his head, and someone else comes up behind me, and I manage to stab him. And then I realize that someone's fired a crossbow bolt into me, and it's stuck on me. I'm going to blow up in 3 seconds.
Nice. I mean, that does sound cool. I wish it worked.
But yeah, why can't you just play that as a normal mode? Why isn't that just something you can choose as when you're joining the server?
I'm quite a risk-averse gamer. I don't like the idea of losing actual things.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea of playing and getting more stuff from playing, because there's no if I come last, then I've come last. I just don't get as much. But
and it also means that it kind of spoils the money system for the unlocks as well, because you don't want to experiment. Like, even if you've got a bunch of spare cash, you think, well, I can't really just spend it on all these guns because I want to be able to play these wager matches occasionally.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. So the wager matches, you need to put at least 500 points in. How much does a normal weapon cost?
2,000 is most unlocks.
How much do you earn per match?
It's weird because, like, a basic, like, a kill in a match or a victory in a match earns you almost nothing. It's all like, oh, you got your 25th knife kill, that's an award, so that gets you 5,000 points or something. Right. So, like,
it's difficult to.
I had a kill that got me like 7 different awards and leveled me up.
Are all the unlocks available to every level, or have you got to level up to specific
You've also got to level up to unlock the ability to unlock the unlocks with the unlock currency.
it's so complicated and so boring for a shooter, you know?
Of the multiplayer maps I tried to play, I thought the Vietnam one was terrible as well. Like, everything about Vietnam in that game seems bad.
There are a few maps that are kind of cool. There's one where you can actually launch a rocket into space, like, as part of it. And it's just like, it's quite useful because it opens the roof to a certain point in a domination game, so then you can capture it.
Nice.
Cool.
But there's also got like a bunch of the gadgets are really cool. It's got the remote control car.
The little remote control car.
That's a kill streak really reward once you've unlocked it. So you get 3 kills and you get that. 3 kills is actually, you know, fairly doable for anyone. Yeah. And of course, you've got it, like, that's then available to you for the rest of the match until you use it. Like, it doesn't matter if you die.
What does the car do? Is it, I think it's explosive.
Yeah, you just trigger it to explode. So it's just like GTA, you know, if you ever fucked around with it.
It's really scary when you see it coming towards you as well.
Yeah, it's just pure comedy. Oh God, a remote control car! Yeah, so everyone you attack with it, like, they always see it coming because it's quite loud. It's got bright green light on it. Yeah. And then you just see them, like, backing off in fear and spraying.
Can you kill it by shooting it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Need to not panic so much, wouldn't
it? Yeah, shotguns are good for it because it's easy to get enough damage quickly.
Does it
explode when you shoot it? Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
The first time I used it, I was so excited about getting it, I just immediately activated it on the spot. I was forgetting that you keep killstreak rewards even if you die.
Yeah.
And so I thought, got to use this before I die. And then as soon as I used it, I saw through the car's eyes that a guy was running up to me about to shoot me. I panicked and I pressed fire, which blew it up in my own face and killed me. Okay, I should probably retire.
PC gamer and shooters. Okay, shall we talk about the racist Nazi zombies mode?
Sure.
Is it racist? I haven't played
it. It's got a comedy Asian voice in it.
Okay.
That is really horrific.
That doesn't sound great.
Yeah, I don't know who there's 3 characters that we've seen in the normal zombie mode, and they're all very, like, exaggerated archetypes, but I don't know if they're supposed to be specific people or not.
Okay.
There's, like, a cocky American who's a bit Duke Nukem-ish. There's a Russian who's very much like the heavy.
Yeah.
And then there's the Asian stereotype.
That's who you play as in the actual thingy.
Yeah. See, it doesn't do any job at all of explaining what's going on.
No, the zombie mode is bizarre. Like, unless you played it in World of War, you wouldn't know how the fuck to do anything. Because it's a single-player or co-op survival mode where you're in a creaky old house and zombies are breaking in through the doors, and you get money for killing them. You can use the money to buy weapons. Although it doesn't tell you how to do that either. You have to walk up to... You don't even, like, see guns and walk up to them. You have to find a chalk outline of a gun, and that gives you the ability to buy one.
And then you need to go back to it to buy ammo as well.
Yeah, and I didn't know that until someone told me. and everything else in the world, there's like so many different gadgets and weird things in the room, and every time you walk up to anything it says turn on the power. You haven't turned on the power. Why aren't you turning on the power?
Come on the power.
It turns out it's like seven rooms down, and every room you go to costs, you have to pay money to open doors. Like, they really don't want the player to open doors in these games. And so it costs like $1,000 to open a door.
That's a good point, actually. But they have the tech to open doors. Yeah. There's nothing stopping them opening doors in the game, is there? Because they put it in Nazi zombies.
But all the way you're getting these character voices. And like I said, I was playing the Asian person. It was just offensive to me. Have you ever seen Dragon, the Bruce Lee story?
Yeah.
You know the bit when he's in the cinema watching the horrible racist caricature? Yeah. You're playing that character. I mean, angered me so much when I was playing it. And it's not even fun.
Yeah.
The only saving grace of the zombie mode is that after you complete the single player campaign, this is a very mild spoiler that's not related to the main single player story, so stop listening for 30 seconds if you really care. But you complete the main story, there's a long cutscene, and then it just cuts to a completely unrelated cutscene of JFK, Nixon and Castro in a meeting room and JFK's trying to explain to Castro why he's brought Nixon into a meeting that he like broke a peace after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And then zombies show up at the door. JFK's
That is funny. Yeah. I think the thing that interests me about Black Ops more than anything is that I think I liked Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2 a bit, but not as much, because it was pretty close to looking and feeling like a soldier game. It's obviously very scripted. It wasn't really a soldier simulation of any type, but it looked and felt like you were a guy on the street shooting at people in, random hot location. And that was pretty cool. And I'm really surprised that they've gone more and more batshit with the series. When I think the reason it probably was so popular was because, we see a lot of stuff on TV with soldiers in it, and it was pretty close to that. By doing the Black Ops stuff, they've gone super crazy, super weird. Like, they've thrown as many just batshit ideas as possible against it, and it's stopped looking like a soldier game and more looking like a alternate history game.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that if they'd done something cool with it, if it was, about being a covert agent and it was using these weird gadgets in inventive ways, but it's not, it's just war.
Yeah.
With a different costume.
It's like the least covert game ever. I just want to add
about the costume I was talking about with the JFK and the zombies, that then unlocks your ability to play as JFK, Nixon and Castro in a new map for the zombie mode, which is the White House.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, that's cool.
Okay, shall we...
Can I just say, people just play Killing Floor if you want to play zombies.
Killing Floor is really good. Killing Floor. Yeah.
Shall we talk about... shall we do some questions from Twitter?
If you want.
We might have to cut this one a little bit short because I've got to shoot off.
Okay.
Right. We had several thousand questions from Twitter.
We're all wearing Valve shirts.
Yeah, we are.
You've got Left 4 Dead, I've got Portal, I've got Left 4 Dead 2 top. Different games, at least.
Yeah. Okay, so questions from Twitter for PC Gamer. Right. We started...
It was like 12 or something. You put the question there or something. It was really early.
Okay. Give me 2 secs. Question. Whatever happened to Max Payne?
Oh, yeah. That was that Max Payne 3, right?
Yeah, Max Payne 3 is announced.
And it was like shaven-headed and it was in Colombia or something.
Maybe Rockstar realised how mad they've gone.
It was Brazil, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was real.
It was funny because they started talking to us about doing a bit more coverage on it about 6 months ago, and then everything went a bit cold. So I imagine it's been put back into a bit to cook. I'd love to see it in as soon as possible, though. I bet it's like, June this year, and they'll just do a blitz like they did with Red Dead on the consoles.
So we don't know.
A Big Bat asks, I thought it was a lady. I thought it was like Abigail Bat. what's the scariest game you've played and why? Mine's a toss-up between Thief, Silent Hill 2 and Amnesia.
I don't find Amnesia particularly scary because those kind of tropes don't bother me that much. Haunted house, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, if they're done that way, I still think it's System Shock 2.
System Shock 2?
Screaming of the monkeys.
Can I use this as an excuse to talk about Spy Party?
Yeah, because...
Spy Party. Because this is an indie game from a guy called Chris Hecker who worked on Spore and is now striking out on his own. And we've written about it in the mag a few times. It's a game for two players where one is a sniper. Well, this is the first kind of bit of it. There's going to be others. One is a sniper and the other is a spy. Sniper's looking through his scope at a party. through the windows and the spies at the party and mingling among other guests. The sniper doesn't know which one of the guests the spy is. All the other guests are controlled by the AI. And so the spy's job is to look like he's an AI and amble around and
that
talk to
hilarious.
Other people. And while he's doing that, he's got to complete a series of missions. And the clever part is, but all the missions are things like bargain ambassador or say a code word to a secret agent, to a double agent. Right. Takes a microfilm from a book in one bookcase and move it to another one. They're all things where if you're looking at the spy, you'll be able to tell he's doing it. But you have to be looking at the guy who is the spy when it happens. Yeah. And he can do them in any order. And at the start of the mission, he gets to choose which ones he has to do. So you can say, I just want to do one thing. And that makes your time limit much, much shorter. But obviously, the sniper has got to cover all possible things because he doesn't know what you have to do. And it sounds like it's going to be so easy to spot who the human is because, you know, humans just don't move anything like AI. But they've done it in a really clever way where the AI does move kind of weirdly. Like, they do move erratically. They do move into the middle of nowhere and then turn around. They take slightly stupid routes to places. Every time you think the AI would never do that, you find out, oh, that wasn't AI. I just shot the wrong guy and the mission's over. You only have one shot. If you shoot the wrong person, you fail. If you shoot the spy, obviously you win.
Yeah.
The spy completes his missions in the time limits, he wins. If time runs out and he hasn't done them, then you win. But the spy can extend his time limit by going to the window and looking at his watch. He's playing against Phil Cameron earlier, and he was the spy. And I saw he was running out of time, and I was just relaxing. I was thinking, there's no way he's going to do all these things, because I know he hasn't done the statue one. I know he hasn't done the microphone one. And then the time was just about to tick down, and suddenly it went up by 50 seconds. I'm like, shit, someone at the window just looked at their watch, and I immediately looked at the window, and I couldn't tell who it was. And I found out afterwards that he just looked at his watch and then sprinted across the other side of the room. So all good to tell. And awesome. You can do things like, as a spy, you can... Basically, when you say the code word to the secret agent, it is audible to the sniper and everyone else, and it's banana bread, right? It's the code word. So every time you hear banana bread, you know that the spy is either talking to the double agent, which he has to do. He's chosen that as an objective. And you know you have two people who might be the double agent.
Right.
So you look for people who are in conversation with those, and if it's someone you've already marked as suspicious because they've done something else a bit, you know.
So you can mark people as...
Yeah, you can. There's like whole gradients of suspicion. So you click someone to mark them up as suspicious, they get lighter. You click right-click to mark them down as less suspicious.
Right.
So every time you see someone move a bit weirdly, you just mark them up, and you just have to keep doing this. Like, mark everyone up if they do anything weird. Mark someone way down if they've done something you're sure is the AI. And so it's either the spy is in conversation with the double agent,
right,
and you have a pretty good idea of who the double agent is, or they've just decided to say it to a random person. So I tried to fuck with Phil last time I was the spy, and just as soon as the game started, walked straight to the double agent, just said, banana bread, that's my job done, don't have to do it anymore. And it's so early on that he's not ready for it, he's not really scanning those people. And of course, when it's that early on, you think it's fake, because it's hard to get to the double agent that quickly. And then later on, just when I was just talking to some random, just you stand near someone, you automatically engage in the conversation, so it looks like you're the AI. I was just talking to some random person and did the fake banana bread. And I thought, he's going to be sure this is the real one because he thinks the last one was fake one.
Yeah.
And then immediately went over and swapped two statues, which is another objective you've got to do, because there's no way he's going to look at the statues when the banana bread's just been said and he's searching people talking to the double agent. And that worked, but then I fucked up later on and changed a microfilm like while he was looking at me. Because the reason it's scary is when you're the spy, you can see the laser sight of the sniper. So you can see exactly where he's looking. And he's looking at me while I was reading this book. And there's this take microfilm option. I didn't have to do it this way, but I thought that would just be a discreet, like, you know, it goes into your inventory. But instead, it, like, you peel back the cover of the book and do it this really suspicious way. And I could see this laser right on my face as I was doing it. And he didn't shoot. And so I thought, my God, I'm safe. So then I thought, I know, I'm just going to walk to the window and read the book in the window, because that's the thing the AI do. But I thought no player would ever do that. And as I did that, it shot me in the head, and it turned out he knew I was a spy when I took out the microfilm, but he just couldn't find the fire control.
Awesome. Okay, more questions. That's a very long answer. I hope that helps.
So the spy party in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Dears Fella asks, have you had any experience in using game-making software like GameMaker?
I have.
Tom's making a game right now, in fact.
Yep, I haven't finished it, though, so I can't claim, you know, to know the process start to finish. But yeah, it's... it's not like trivially easy. There's a drag and drop mode where you can, you know, mess around with behaviors like that, which is visual and more intuitive, but you can't do a full, really good game like that. Like, you have to get into coding eventually. But what it does do is it means you can just set up some basic stuff like that. And then when you realize, you know, I need Finer Control, or I need to do this really advanced thing, you look up how to do that on the wiki, and then you type that in, and it kind of eases you into the coding side of it. Then eventually you get to the point where you just think, I'm doing it all in code.
Can you turn those code bits into drag and drops themselves?
No. Yeah, one of the drag and drop items is just a chunk of code. Okay. So yeah, I do use drag and drop to like organize chunks of code. But.
Ike Box asks, what is your favorite dog from a computer game? Robot dogs do not count.
How we ever like the robot dogs?
I like the dog from Commandos. He's a badass dog.
Oh, yeah? Oh, I know. The one from Red Alert, because he can get in a Jeep, and then the Jeep is like a special custom Jeep, which changes its top gun depending on who's in it. So if you put a rocket launcher guy in it, it turns into a triple rocket launcher. If you put a dog in it, it turns into a loudspeaker, so he can bark louder. And that stuns people.
What is your game of the year? One word answers. Number one. Wolfsbite asks, what is your Christmas number one and game of the year?
Christmas number one would be Cod Blobs.
One word answers. What are the games 2 words? Yeah. Supreme.
Is that, I mean, does that include, I mean, I'm taking it means games this year.
I think Christmas.
So wait, are we doing charts or game of the year?
PC wise, game of the year. Christmas number one will be Cataclysm. And my game of the year is probably Mass Effect 2. Mm.
I don't really have a decision to make. I mean, Minecraft out last year. I really enjoyed Stalker, really enjoyed Bioshock 2, and I really enjoyed TF2. Fallout New Vegas. Okay. Really enjoying Football Manager. None of them are as good as TF2 though.
Yeah.
And mine is Supreme Commander 2.
Okay. Michael Asprey asks, does retailers' current ranting boycott of Steam show they already lost whatever battle exists between them?
It just shows that there's beyond shipping.
A couple of digital retailers and online retailers have said
to MCV, who refuse to be named,
Have said to MCV that they're fed up with games coming with Steamworks
because they don't want to sell Steam on their own channel. Yeah.
And they say,
I think is a fair point.
That's a fair point, but them claiming that Steam have a monopoly and whatever. They vacated this area for Steam to fill up, you know.
They said Valve's monopoly on PC gaming, Valve's monopoly is hurting PC gaming, and, it's doomed.
Yeah, but it's not, is it?
What they mean is Valve is stealing the monopoly on PC gaming, and their share of the PC gaming market is dying, which it is, of course it is.
Yeah.
Because your service shit.
In that stuff, there was Valve own 80% of the digital download market. Mm-hmm. I reckon the other 20% is probably World of Warcraft.
and the high street retailers, you know, they just don't do any favors to themselves. Someone tweeted me the other day that one of them still selling APB. You know,
it's just stupid, isn't it? Like,
be part of what we are, don't just rip us off like you've been trying to do.
Yeah. I think that they are bluffing and they're just saying it to scare people into not using Steam.
Yeah.
Like, they want publishers to think, we better not use Steam because now its future is uncertain. It might not get retail because retail still is a huge chunk of their sales. And that they would, I don't think they would ever actually refuse to stop.
I think this bust up has been inevitable ever since Valve started on Steamworks.
Yeah.
And I think, we've all been sat there watching retailers sell someone else's store going, guys, look in the box that you're selling.
But they never do. The thing. And that's why they're still selling APB and games that can access another store because they're just clueless.
I mean, Football Manager. I was really surprised Football Manager went so heavily into Steamworks.
FM does both though. Really? If you install FM from the disc, you don't need to install Steam along with it.
Really?
In fact, you don't even need to put a CD in, as far as I can tell, because I installed it.
Wow, that's interesting.
It just launched straight away.
I didn't know that.
No, it's it does both.
Cool.
The reason publishers have been happy to go with Steam and integrate Steam and make it, use Steamworks, which means it's, totally embedded within Steam, is that, there's no major competitor because no one else has made anything very good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But
make something better.
It's entirely beneficial for them to use it. They can do so much stuff with Steam. They can actually...
I do think a couple of digital distribution labels have started up in the past year and a half, 2 years, and they've offered very good deals in terms of the actual price of games. But I don't think they've managed to get any market share despite offering them at below cost, pretty much.
Yeah.
Just because Steam is so dominant and so easy to use.
Yeah. But yeah,
building in community functions, matchmaking, friends list, and groups into a game and also a shop, I think that's an unbeatable position.
Well, all that, but what Steam offers publishers is an amazing ability to like see where you're selling your games, and more importantly, patch it on day one, you know, which from the disc, which is some, and also lock the disc off, you know, which is a bit of a dick move. But that's what they, that's, you know, when Call of Duty came out, people were buying it, going home, installing it, and then said, no, you can't play it until 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Which is a dick move, but, you know, Steam gives the publisher and developer power again that they don't have anymore.
That's a fair point. And we have to call it there because I have to get a taxi immediately. Okay. So thank you very much, guys. We will have another podcast with you shortly, and I think we'll do a special Game of the Year one, or Games of the Year one.
We've got a year one rather than Games of the Year.
Yeah, we could do just a year one. That'd be good. So thank you very much. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.